is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Coach Corey Harris from the Beijing Royal Fighters CBA team, and you're listening to the Hoop Heads podcast. Let's get into it.
Hey, Hoop Heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Early tip-off tonight. We are Tuesday night, 11:39 p.m., so we haven't made it to Wednesday yet. But we are going to talk about, hopefully, some actual basketball tonight after we get through some of the latest developments in the bubble.
Yeah, Jay. We're going to talk about the bubble. Did you make a trip anywhere tonight, Mike? Did you go to Magic City with
I did not pick up any wings.
No wings.
Did not hook up with Jack Harlow or any other famous, not famous celebrities.
That is the worst excuse. I was getting chicken wings. He clearly was in the club because Jack Harlow took a picture of him in the club. Come on now.
Well, they don't bring the chicken wings right to your car. You got to go in and get them, I heard.
There's no curbside pickup at Magic City.
But I don't know what that would look like, even if they did.
I don't know if you saw, I retweeted an NBA writer who lives in Atlanta. I don't know if I retweeted.
Said the wings are really good.
He sent a picture. Sweet Lou, I understand. Did I send that to you? I think I did.
But maybe. I don't know. You probably did.
It was so long ago. There's been so much information between the baseball debacle and the NBA stuff. Oh, yeah. Zach Soskin, he is a writer for he's an athlete advocate and brand builder in Atlanta. He apparently took a picture of it, and it's gone viral. And it said, I totally get it, Lou Will, and the food actually looks really, really good. So, I don't understand why he knew that he was under a microscope when he left, why he would do that and put himself in that kind of jeopardy. I don't understand it. And this goes back to our point of, is the bubble going to hold up? Not if this continues to happen. Now, I think once the season actually starts, players aren't going to be leaving in and out. And it really hasn't been, if you look at it, there really hasn't been that many people that have left and come back. There's only been a few. But I just don't understand what goes through his mindset here. And we'll talk about this in a little bit about, you know, predictions as far as what we think is going to happen once the season gets back starting up. But I just don't feel, and I know I heard someone talking about it, I don't remember who it was, that the Clippers don't seem to be having a lot of good synergy going right now. Whereas I'll talk about this later. I feel like the Lakers are like really treating this the right way. And I don't know if it's just because LeBron is LeBron and he can get it out of them. His leadership can get it out of them. But it just seems like the Clippers are kind of disjointed, in my opinion. And I don't know what that means, but I just can't believe that he went, you know, I totally understand he had to go to a funeral, but of all places to go to get chicken wings, he went to a gentleman's club. Give me a break.
Well, look, I don't know what the wings are like at Magic City. I just know that it's probably not a smart move to go anywhere that could be deemed somewhat questionable, that could potentially put you in contact with a lot of people and put you in contact with the virus, and then bringing that back into the bubble. Obviously, he's going to quarantine. I believe he's under the 10-day rule.
And he lost 150 grand, Mike. Those chicken wings better been good.
They better be really good. $150,000 chicken wings better be pretty tasty, I'll tell you that. But he's going to be in the quarantine for 10 days. So theoretically, it shouldn't be an issue for anybody else. I think
we've talked a little bit on the outside of the podcast about baseball and just how it seems like the idea of thinking that you could play games and travel around and have these guys going wherever they go and coming in contact with whoever they contact clearly isn't going to work. When you're testing every single day, you have to believe that the population of your players is going to mimic the population of the greater, you know, the greater population's percentage of COVID tests that are positive is going to mimic what you have with your baseball team if they're doing the same thing that every other citizen is doing. Whereas the NBA, by putting the players in a bubble and keeping them isolated and only interacting among themselves, it's clear that that is the right path. Now, we still don't know for sure that it's going to work. There's still, it's obviously not an airtight bubble. So we still have Disney employees and we still have Lou Will and other people leaving and coming back in. But it seems like the NBA is at least close to doing this as well as they possibly can. And I continue to be more and more optimistic every day as they get closer and they've started playing games. And I think after we get to Thursday's regular season debut, and then we're another week or two into that, by the time the playoffs are rolling around, I think we'll have a pretty good idea of whether this is going to work. I guess the next caveat would be once they start allowing more people in and they start allowing families
in. That's after the first round of the playoffs, though, right?
Right. As teams get eliminated, you're eliminating some people, but you're also bringing in a whole new group of people who you have no idea where they've been or who they've been in contact with. So that's going to be the next kind of, I think,
inflection point. I think in science class we call that an independent variable, right, Mike?
There you go. That sounds right. That sounds right to me. I'll take your word for it. So I think that's the issue, is what are these different points where things could potentially go wrong? And one of them is once the teams start playing against each other and you're actually out on the floor. So we've had some scrimmages now where the teams are going against each other. We're going to have the seeding games coming up. So I think once we get out that 10 to 14 days from when teams started playing against each other, that's going to be a point where the testing becomes very, very important. And then I think once you have teams leave and families and other members of the team's traveling party come in, then I think that's going to be another point where you could potentially have some issues. But it does seem, at least to this point, that the NBA's bubble is holding together, and that's great. Great news for the league, great news for basketball fans out there, and we're close. We're almost to games, and I'm excited about that.
So the other person who's left the bubble but has come back, Zion, and he was cleared to practice tonight, Mike. So sounds like he's going to be good to go for the game coming up here in a few nights, which is exciting. Now, we don't know what kind of shape he's in. He's been quarantined for 4 days, and what was he doing? They never really addressed what he was doing outside the bubble. They said it was a family emergency. I hope it wasn't in regards to the Duke scandal that's been going on here. That could very well be what it was about. But regardless, I'm just excited that he's back. You know, there was some big discussion about whether he was going to be back and cleared and ready to go. But here we are, and he seems to be ready to go. And he's going to be ready to go game one. So I'm excited to see what he does. And I'm just excited for the seeding game starting in 2 days. It's really, really exciting. And I'm thrilled.
It's great news for the Pelicans that Zion's back for sure. If you look at, I know we're going to talk about it here, the 8-9 seeds in the West, clearly with the Pelicans' schedule, they're the only team in the bubble that their collective schedule has a record of under 500. Which is kind of amazing when you think about the fact that most of these teams are either already in the playoffs or competing for a playoff berth. So the fact that they have below 500, an overall record that is below 500, tells you that they probably have the easiest route to making it into that 8-9 game. But without Zion, that would have been a much greater challenge. So the fact that he's going to be there certainly gives them a leg up on trying to make it into either the ninth seed or get up and somehow pass Memphis and get that eighth seed and try to work their way into a matchup with the Lakers, which would be, again, I think kind of what the league would be hoping for. Although I know you
alert. Come on.
All right. Go ahead. All right.
Do we want to talk about it now since we're kind of already talking about it?
All right. We can keep going.
Okay. Well, I think we come back to it. So then I guess the two other things in regards to the bubble that we're going to talk about is there's a few players that have been injured, and some players, it sounds like maybe Oladipo and Jonathan Isaac's going to play, but the big thing is Sabonis has a significant foot injury. I've not seen any further confirmation as to what that is. I was just looking, and I couldn't find anything. I just saw a significant foot injury, and he was leaving the bubble to get a second opinion. So that means he's, at best case scenario, he's not going to be back at all anytime soon, because even if he gets cleared, he's got to come back and be quarantined for 4 or 5 days. But I can't imagine that if it's that significant, he's going to be playing any minutes. And then our good old friend, Mike, our good old friend, Joel Embiid, once again, sitting out games because he's got calf discomfort. The Sixers, they're predicated on health, and you can talk a little bit to the point about Ben Simmons and what they're going to do with him. But I don't see any chance that they win if Embiid and Simmons both aren't playing. And it's just further frustrates me with Embiid, because I truly believe Embiid is probably a top 5-6 player in this league if he's healthy, but he's just never healthy.
Well, he's not healthy, or he has some type of malady that prevents him from being in top shape, whatever that malady might be. And so he's not, I don't think, maximizing what he could be out on the floor, and that's a problem. And I guess the hope, if you're a Sixers fan here, is that him sitting out a meaningless scrimmage is a precautionary measure. And even if he has to sit out the entire 8 restart games, the key is you got to have him healthy for the playoffs. I know we talked a lot about that statistic last year against Toronto with him on the floor versus him off the floor, and just what a huge difference that was in terms of Philly's performance against the Raptors last year in the Eastern Conference semifinals. But nonetheless, it's concerning just because of Embiid's history. If you heard that about another player, he's sitting out because of some calf discomfort, you'd be like, all right, so he misses a scrimmage. Maybe he misses a game or two in the restart. So what? But with Joel Embiid, you have to take it one step further and say, has this been bothering him for a while? Was he able to work out and get in the best possible condition during the break? Is he going to come back at all? Is he going to be compromised? There's a lot to process and think about when it comes to Embiid. And you're right in that the Sixers are not going to go anywhere if they don't have both Embiid and Simmons operating at full capacity. They're just not. And the chances of Embiid operating at full capacity for the entirety of the playoffs, which is what they would need, obviously, to get to the title, I think the chances of that are pretty slim based on what we know about Embiid's history.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right. Do you want to talk to the Simmons piece at all?
Sure, we can address that. I think there's been a lot of positive talk about Brett Brown and the decision to start Shake Milton at the point and move Ben Simmons into a forward position on offense. And I think that there is some positional things that make sense with that change in the lineup. Clearly, you want to have Simmons being a cutter, being a guy who can be in the dunker spot, being a guy who can do some things from there. And then Milton, if he can continue to shoot the ball well, fills their offense with a guy who can knock down shots when Simmons drives or when Embiid gets double teamed in the post. So from that standpoint, positionally, it makes sense. Clearly on the break, Simmons is still going to pull down defensive rebounds and be the nominal point guard in transition. He's still going to have his hands on the ball a lot. It's just in the half-court situation, this gives maybe Philly some different options, some different looks that they can throw at teams. And Simmons, as we know, is a hugely versatile defender, a guy that can guard multiple positions, do lots and lots of things on that end of the floor. So in essence, his role on defense is staying exactly the same. And then on offense, he's basically not the point guard in the half-court offense. Leading the break, he's still going to be the guy who has the ball in his hands. So I think Philly had to mix it up. Last year, Simmons became borderline unplayable, which is unimaginable for a guy who's, you know, probably going to make an all-NBA team this year, I would think. And the fact that you can't play him down the stretch in big games because he just is a liability in the half-court offense, you got to figure out some way to get around that. I know he's taken a couple threes here in the scrimmages. People are all excited, tweeting out the videos of him shooting the three. And is he ever going to be a great shooter?
He made a three in a game, Mike.
I know. I'm just saying that, but it's highly unlikely that he's ever going to become a great three-point shooter. But if he could take a couple a game and be able to space the floor and knock one down every once in a while, he at least becomes a minor threat to be able to do that, where teams maybe have to at least stick one more step closer to him, which opens up more driving lanes and just makes him less of a liability in the half court. So it'll be interesting. Of course, if Embiid's not there, then none of this is even relevant, because Philly's not going to be relevant. They need both of those guys operating at full capacity out on the floor in order for them to have any opportunity to win probably even a first-round series. I don't see them winning a series against anybody in the East in the first round that they're going to have to potentially match up with if they don't have both of those guys. Maybe they can beat Indiana if somehow that matchup were to take place, but they're not beating Toronto, Boston. They're just not beating those teams. Yep.
All right. So the one non
or the Heat would be the other team.
The one non bubble related thing that we're going to discuss here very briefly is we have to give him some credit, because we always seem to bash on him because he's just a bizarre dude. But Kyrie Irving has started a $1.5 million fund for WNBA players who choose to sit out the 2020 WNBA season due to personal, professional, health, and or safety-related reasons. And like I said, we kind of – I'm a Kyrie fan. I will always be a Kyrie fan for the simple fact that he brought us a championship, you know, along with LeBron. But he's bizarre. And he's got some self-destructing tendencies and things. But this is, once again, you know, this is something that's really, I think, is awesome. And he should deserve a lot of credit for it. So we needed to talk about it.
Yeah, no question. Kudos to Kyrie for making this happen and getting it started. I think, as you said, both you and I are fans of Kyrie from a standpoint of what he did while he was here in Cleveland. Since he's left Cleveland, he's not been as well received in, I don't think, either of the places that he's been to this point. Obviously, Boston left on bad terms, and I'm not sure that his Brooklyn Nets era has started out the greatest. And for whatever reason, he seems to rub people the wrong way or think that he's more of a leader than what he is. I don't know what his issues are, but in this case, he's doing something that is fantastic for the WNBA players. It's fantastic that he's stepping up to the plate. We talked a little bit before about it's not just about talking. We talk about these different social justice issues, and that was one of the things we mentioned when he was talking about trying to maybe encourage NBA players to sit out and thinking that they could do more outside the bubble than they could do inside when it came to social justice. And we kind of said that what's important is not just talking about it, is that you have to do something. And not that this is directly tied to social justice, but it is something tangible that he's done. He's put his money where his mouth is. And I don't have any idea. I was trying to look here to see how many NBA or how many WNBA players are actually sitting out the season. I don't really know what that looks like or how many players are going to be sitting out. I honestly have no idea. But clearly $1.5 million is a pretty good start for any of the women who are playing who are choosing to sit out for whatever reason they're choosing to sit out. So kudos to Kyrie for sure.
Yeah. And I would assume more players are going to jump on this, would be my guess. I haven't really seen any other details on it, but I would assume that there's going to be some other players that will jump in on this in some way, shape, or form. But awesome job, Kyrie. One last thing before we start making predictions, Mike, I have to mention it because it's just so funny. Your take on J.R. Smith scoring 20 points, 6 for 7 for 3, 5 rebounds, and Deion Waiters scoring 18 points and having 6 assists for the same team in the Los Angeles Lakers. Go.
Well, when you were talking about – here's what came to mind. When you were talking earlier about the – Clippers versus the Lakers and how the Lakers seem to have such a good positive vibe and the Clippers seem to be maybe staggering along here as we head towards the beginning of the regular season. All I could think about was just the high character guys that the Lakers have on the roster, like JR and Dion and Dwight Howard, and guys who have traditionally been great teammates with positive attitudes, who are coachable and always seem to do the right thing both on and off the floor. And I guess that's what I attribute the Lakers' harmony to, is just the quality of the character of the guys who make up their roster. So when I think of Dion and JR, I think of guys who have been nothing short of great character guys throughout their careers. And so it doesn't surprise me that those guys came in tip-top shape, ready to play and get after it and put up big numbers.
But I know you.
So I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all.
But seriously though, when you saw the thing that JR was at 20 points and it was 6 of 7, you had to be slightly taken aback by that, right?
Yeah, you have to be slightly taken aback, but I think you have to probably check the next 6 box scores and see what those look like, because we clearly know that he's very, very capable, or at least he was very, very capable of going on big hot streaks where he could knock down 6, 7, 8 threes out of 9 or 10. And so maybe he just hit the hot streak right at the right time, and a cold streak could be coming very, very quickly. So can JR help the Lakers in certain spots? I think he can. You look back at the Cavs title run and game 7, if he doesn't hit those 2 threes coming out in the second half.
And if he doesn't stop the break that led to LeBron's block. I mean, you go back and you look at that. He caused Iguodala to double pump.
Yeah. I mean, look, JR was a very, very important part of that title team. He was a very, very important part of every Cleveland team that he was a part of that made the finals. There's no question about that. Would you have liked a better player in his position? Were there guys who could have played that position better? Sure. But to downgrade what JR did, I think, is wrong. And yet at the same time, I think that his history tells you that he's going to be up and down. He hasn't really played in the league in 2 years. I don't know that you can count on him for much of anything game in and game out, but could he steal you a game or keep you in a game one time during the playoffs? And could that end up being a very important moment? Yes. Dion, I have no idea what to make of Dion. You know, you have the year where Miami was, 11-33, and then they went 33-11 down the stretch and totally turned it around. And Dion was playing really, really well and ended up earning that big contract. And then from the moment he signed that contract, it seems like things went the other direction. And he's been suspended, 3 times by the Heat this year. And we know about the gummies incident and everything else. And I think that he's a guy who's always had an overinflated opinion of himself. And yet at the same time, I think if you just look purely at his basketball skills and you looked at his physical capabilities, you would clearly say, look, this guy could be really, really good. He has every skill that you could want. He has a big physical body. He just doesn't have a basketball IQ. He just doesn't understand how to play, for lack of a better
Mike,
way
but
of saying
you will
it.
Be and, glad but, to hear this. He still knows how to stand at the top of the key and wave his arms like he wants the ball.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. Like he's never been a guy who could be the 5th, 6th, 7th man on a good team, because that's just not how he perceives himself. He perceives himself as being the best player on the team or the 2nd best player on the team. And he's just not that. He's never been that. And to a certain degree, you have to have that kind of confidence to get to the league. But most guys eventually get a reality check, and those who have long-term success end up figuring out that I may have been the star, I may have been the best player, I may have been the number 2 pick or the number 4 pick or the number 6 pick in the draft, but I'm not a superstar player. And as a result, I got to find my role and figure out what I can do to help my team. And it seems like Dion has never really gotten to that point, at least not for any sustained length of time. And so that's just a difficult position to be in as a teammate or as a coach, because you can't count on that guy to do and play his role game in and game out and be consistent, because he consistently thinks that he should be doing more. And that makes it real tough. So I don't expect Dion to be a contributor, to be honest with you, but I would expect JR to have an impact on 1 or 2 games that the Lakers play. It could be positive or negative. I mean, JR might shoot 0 for 9 in a game, and then he might turn around and go 6 for 7 in a playoff game. So I expect JR to kind of be a part of it. I don't expect Deion to be a real part of the Lakers roster that has any impact on what they end up doing.
All right. So here we go. So now we're going to move to our new segment called Bubble Predictions. I don't know if we want to come up with segment names for these things, but Bubble Predictions. So the first prediction, we're not going to spend any time on the East, the eighth seed in the East. We know Washington's got zero. I'm willing to say this. Washington has zero chance of being the eighth seed. Even as bad as the Nets roster is, I don't think there's any chance. So I'm just going to say it right there. I think the eight teams in the East are pretty well locked, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
So we're going to go to the West. Our question is, there's going to be two parts to this question. One, who's going to end up being the eighth seed in the West? And two, will there be a play-in series for the eighth spot? I'll answer the will there be a play-in series. Yes, there will be a play-in series. I don't think there's any way in shape or form that there will not be a play-in series for the eighth seed. Do you agree with that?
I agree. There's too many teams too bunched up there for the idea that even if Memphis, let's say Memphis plays really, really well and they go 5-3 or 6-2, something like that, I just think one of those other teams is going to play well enough to stay within four games of them. So yep. I don't see how Memphis gets themselves clear. And obviously nobody else has any possibility of getting four games clear of the other
okay,
teams.
We're
so
willing to completely I'm willing to completely write off Phoenix and San Antonio. I don't think they have any chance. I probably would say the same thing for Sacramento, even though they have the same record as New Orleans. I don't see them being the team. I really think, Mike, and I know this is going to make you sad, I really think Portland's the team. I think Portland's going to play them in the play-in series. Now, I don't know that Portland can pass Memphis. They'd have to basically go 6-2 to even have a chance to pass Memphis, and Memphis would have to really do bad. But I just think that Portland team, no one wants to play them. I know we've talked off the air. I don't think anyone, you know, they haven't played a lot together in the scrimmages, but there was one or two possessions that I watched with Dame, CJ, Carmelo, Collins, and Nurkic on the floor all together. I mean, when I just rattled off those names, and Carmelo Anthony is probably the fifth best player on that five. I mean, you could maybe mark him as Collins. That's pretty dangerous. And I'm just saying, I don't think any team's licking their chops playing Portland. I think the Lakers are looking at that. That would be their worst case scenario. I don't think the Lakers would lose to the Portland Trailblazers, but I don't think they would sweep the Portland Trailblazers. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I don't think that the Lakers would be excited, super excited to see either New Orleans or Portland. I think that all things being equal, I think they would probably prefer to see the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, I'll right? completely agree.
I think of those three teams. I mean, those are the three most likely teams. So I'm not sure that they want to see not only Portland, but I'm not sure they want to see the Pelicans and Zion.
I guess they would probably prefer to see Sacramento, right?
Yeah, I mean, they'd rather, right. I mean, I guess, you know, they'd rather see any of those teams. They don't want to see Portland, and they don't want to see the New Orleans Pelicans. And I guess probably they're more likely to, I guess if you had to split hairs on that, they'd probably rather play New Orleans just because of the experience, whereas Portland with Lillard and the other guys that they have on the roster that have playoff experience, that team I think is more playoff ready, more playoff hardened at least than the Pelicans. But I'm not sure they're excited to see Zion and Brandon Ingram and Lonzo and all the things that go along with that. Again, I don't think either of those teams necessarily are beating the Lakers, but they wouldn't be. I can't imagine either one of those series being complete, just walkover 4-0 sweeps for the Lakers where they don't have to break a sweat. Yep. I don't see that happening. So I'm just looking at Memphis's schedule, by the way, is brutal. So I'm looking at the teams that Memphis has to play. So they play Portland. Big game. That is a huge game for Memphis, that Portland game. Huge. Second game, San Antonio, winnable. Third game, New Orleans, huge game. Then they go Utah, Oklahoma City, Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee. So, I mean, the first three games they play teams that are below them in the standings in the West that are all fighting to take their spot. And then after that, they play all teams that are squarely in the playoffs that may or may not have anything to play for, especially by the time you get to that Boston-Milwaukee. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how those good teams approach it. Are they going to slowly build the minutes in for their players where at the beginning their good players are only playing 25 minutes a game, and then by the end those guys are up to playing 35, 40 minutes a game? Or do they come in and say, all right, we got to take care of business and just make sure we cement our seed. They play 35 minutes a game at the beginning, and then at the end, they kind of ease up heading into the playoffs. I don't know which one it's going to be. I think it's going to be interesting if one team takes one particular way of approaching that playing time issue and another team takes a different tact. I don't know. I'm really curious to see how these teams at the top of the standings, how they handle these seeding games in terms of the amount of playing time that their stars are getting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I'm really looking forward to that first game, that Memphis-Portland game on a Friday night. Friday afternoon is even better. I think it's at 4 o'clock. I will definitely be tuning in to watch that as long as I can corral the children. Because
there you go.
I'm really excited. And that's on NBA TV, so that's not one that's blocked out. So that's awesome. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm adopting the Portland Trailblazers.
That's your team. That's who you're
as the team
for.
That I'm rooting for right. To get that spot. So okay. I really think it's an interesting team, and I think I also have an argument with a few friends of mine that when I talked was it 2 weeks ago and said Carmelo is going to end up being a top 50, top 75 player all time. They didn't even want to put him in the top 100. I'm like, guys, by the time his career is over, he could possibly be the 10th, 11th, 12th leading scorer. Now, I know Steph Curry and Durant will pass him, but he's still going to be in the top 15 scoring all time. He's got to be in the consideration for top 50 NBA players. I know that's really hard for some people to understand because he's never really had playoff success, but you could go back to saying Charles Barkley never had real playoff success. He's a top 50 NBA player all time. I mean, it's just that's my opinion, and I know
Carmelo's borderline top 50.
He's for sure top 75. If you go back, for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I said to my friends, I said, if he's top 50, he's in the 45 to 50 range. He's not going to be in like the 30s. I think what someone hears always a top 50 player, people are automatically thinking I'm putting him in like 25th spot. No. I think he's in the 40s if he's a top 50 player. I think that's my stance. I'd have to really sit down.
He's borderline. You'd have to really go through that list and look at who's on it. And then you also have to think about comparing eras and some of the guys who played in the 60s.
Here's my big argument. He's played in this era, but he's never had a 3-point shot, Mike. He's done all the scoring without 3-pointers, really, when you look at it.
Well, he shot some threes. I don't know how many he's made over the course of his career, but he's knocked down some threes. Look, I've said it before. Carmelo is a guy who, in his prime, I'm not sure there was anybody I would have rather given the ball to with 5 seconds to go and said, get me a bucket. He could score in so many different ways. He could put it on the floor. He could get to the rim. He could post up. He could just jab step, and then score. He's really good as a one-on-one player. He was a good rebounder when he was engaged. The knock on Carmelo was he didn't make his teammates better and that his defense was never what you would need out of your best player and your superstar in order to lead a championship team. And I guess, again, that's a knock. That puts him one step below the guys who are the greatest players of all time. But there's a lot of guys that fall into that category. You know, you mentioned Charles Barkley. You have Malone, guys that didn't win a title. And so I think Carmelo falls into that area, and then you're talking somewhere probably from 45 to 75. And without looking at the entire list, I'm not sure exactly where I'd put him, but he's a borderline top 50 player. I think that's fair.
Yep.
Do you think there's any chance that Memphis falls out completely and that Portland and New Orleans both
Here's why. I think those last two games that you mentioned, the Memphis, I think Milwaukee and Boston, I don't see them play.
So you think that? So you think those teams are going to sit?
I think they're
going to
sit a lot.
I
think the last. See, if I was the NBA and I didn't make the schedule, Mike. If you don't know that, I didn't make the schedule. But
okay, I thought you were the schedule maker.
If I was the NBA, what I would have done is I would have purposefully changed that around a little bit, and I would have had the last few games possibly impact seeding situation, where the last two games that Memphis is playing is their last games are Portland. Their last games are, you know,
Right, but I think the danger then is that it's already been settled by that point. So let's do this. How about this little exercise? I pulled up all the schedules. Do you have pen and paper in front of you?
I have pen and paper. Sure.
All right. Okay, pen and paper. Let's go through and let's predict the records of each of these teams based on their schedule, and then let's see if there's any chance that Memphis gets bounced out of that 8-9
go ahead.
Playoff play-in. Okay, so we're going to do Memphis first. Memphis game one, Memphis versus Portland.
I'm giving it to Portland.
Okay, so Memphis is 0-1. Memphis, San Antonio.
1-1.
Okay, Memphis, New Orleans.
1-2.
Memphis, Utah.
1-3.
Memphis, Oklahoma City.
1-4.
Memphis, Toronto.
1-5.
Thank you. 1-5. Memphis, Boston.
1-6. Okay.
Memphis, Milwaukee.
1-7.
Or sorry, 1-7.
But once again, I'm going to reiterate the point that Milwaukee could be sitting their players. I'm saying.
All right, but look, but even if they sit their players, Milwaukee without Giannis is like still one of the top.
Well, you have to imagine if Giannis is sitting that.
All right, but look, let's just. All right. Do you think they're going to win? Do you think Memphis is winning that game or Milwaukee's winning that game?
Probably Milwaukee.
All right, so they're one and seven. Okay, so Memphis is 1-7. All right, let's go to Portland's schedule.
Already gave Portland 1-0. Right. Portland's 1-0.
Okay, yeah. So Portland's 1-0. I gotta get to their restart schedule. All right, here we go. Portland Trailblazers. So their first game is Memphis. So they're 1-0 at Boston,
That's a toss up. I think Portland could beat them.
I say that's a loss.
Okay, so 1-1.
I think it's a loss. 1-1. Houston.
I'm rooting for Portland.
That's a win. Come on. That's
2-1.
A win. 2-1. Denver.
Is Bol Bol playing well?
They're 2-2.
Okay.
The LA Clippers.
2-3.
Sixers.
3-3.
Okay. Dallas.
That's a toss-up. That's a toss-up game. Let's just say 3-3-1. Let's just say that for now.
Brooklyn.
Oh, that's 4-3. Okay, so let's go with the hypothetical. Let's just say that they were to lose the.
Let's say they're 5.
Or say it's 5.
You're gonna have lose.
I was gonna say they. Let's say they lose the Portland game or lose the Dallas game. That puts them at 4-4, right? Yep.
4-4. All right, let's make them 4-4. All right,
so they've not passed up Memphis then in this situation because they.
All right, so there's your. But if they go 5-3,
they would have passed Memphis up. So.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So, all right. All right. All right. Let's go to New Orleans. Okay. All right. So New Orleans. Let's see. Let me get to that. All right, New Orleans. They open with the Utah Jazz.
That's a loss.
That's a win.
Oh.
All right, I'll give them a loss. 0-1. The second game, the Clippers.
0-2.
Okay, Memphis.
1-2.
We already said Sacramento.
That's 2-2.
Washington.
That's 3-2.
San Antonio.
That's 4-2.
Sacramento.
That's 5-2.
Orlando.
That's 6-2.
Okay, so they're 6-2.
So they've moved up to the 8 seed.
So they've passed Memphis, and Portland has to go 5-3 with Memphis going 1-7, which I think, looking at the schedule, is entirely possible. Let's just put it this way. Let's leave open the possibility that Memphis is not going to make it into that 8th, 9th seed play-in games.
Yep.
Let's put it this way. I think New Orleans' schedule is so pitiful that they're getting in. They're gonna either be the 8th or 9th seed. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Barring something completely unforeseen, I just don't see how, based on their schedule, they don't make it into that play-in scenario.
The question mark will be: is will Zion stay healthy for the 8 games? That's the only thing that you have. The whole thing is hinged on: is Zion healthy after 8 games?
Even that being said, I could still see them going 7-1, 6-2. I could still see it because they just don't play anybody. And then you look at Portland.
Hey man, you're talking to Orlando has home court advantage. Come on, Mike.
Okay. And then, if we're really thinking that Portland can challenge the Lakers, then Portland's schedule, we're probably underselling them, saying they're going to go.
Well, I was underselling their thing because I think they could beat Boston. We gave Boston the win on that one, right?
Right.
I think they could beat Dallas for
sure.
They beat
Denver last year in the Western Conference Finals.
I think they could beat Denver. Here's my view. I think Portland, as we talked about Memphis, I think Memphis has a shot of winning 3 of those games. I think they'll win 1, but they have a shot at winning 3 of those games. I think Portland has a shot of winning all but 1 of those games. If all the things go their way. I think New Orleans.
Right, I understand.
I think New Orleans probably has a shot at winning, 7 of those games. If they play the right way, probably more like 6.
Right, I agree. Yeah. Let's put it this way. I think there's a decent chance that both Portland and New Orleans pass Memphis. I think there's a decent chance. I'm not saying it'll happen, but I think I'd give it a better than 50% chance that Portland and New Orleans both get past Memphis, because I just don't think Memphis is going to win many of these games.
I can buy it. I can see it. All right. The next thing we're going to talk about is what current teams will rise and fall from their current standing. So really quickly, Mike, I'm just going to read through the standings, and we can just talk about whether we think anyone's going to catch them. We'll start in the East. Milwaukee's basically got the 1 seed locked up. There's zero chance. Toronto is at 2nd place. They are 3 games ahead of Boston, which is in 3rd place. And then Miami's 2.5 behind them. Indiana's 2. 76ers are 2 behind them. And then Brooklyn is 8. Brooklyn can't go up higher than 7. And they're not going to. Orlando's only a half game out. And Washington. Man, Mike, now when I look at this, there's a chance for a play-in game in the East, and it's just because the Brooklyn Nets are going to be so pitiful, and if the Wizards were to win like 3 games, I could see Brooklyn going 0-8. So
the Wizards are terrible, though. The Wizards don't have
Rui Hachimura.
They don't have Bertans. No, I'm telling you, I don't think there's going to be a play-in game. I mean, Brooklyn could go 0-8.
If they go 0-8, all Washington would need to do is win 2 games, and one of those games would have been against Brooklyn. So then they would only have to win 1 other game.
Look, I don't see. Okay. I don't see that happening. All right. I really don't. So let's just go through these. The Bucks are going to stay.
They can't be passed. Toronto's 6.5 behind them, so they can't be passed. So it's impossible.
Toronto's gonna stay at 2. Boston's not gonna make up 3 games on the Raptors. Yep. Both of those teams are too. Toronto's too good. They're too prideful. They're not gonna Toronto's not going to lay down and go 2-6 or 1-7 during the restart. There's no way. So Toronto's going to stay there. I think the same for Boston in terms of I don't think they're going to fall off a cliff where somebody's going to pass them. Then I think the 4-5-6 becomes really interesting because then you start getting into do any of those teams, 4, 5, and 6, have a preference for where they, you know, how they want to finish. Is there going to be any chicanery to try to finish in a particular spot?
If I'm the 76ers, I purposely try to stay in the sixth seed. I would rather play Boston than play Miami.
Yeah, the question is, I think you want to play Indiana, right?
Yeah, but
especially
if Philly was to pass, if Philly's to pass Indiana, then Indiana drops down to the sixth seed, and I don't see Miami falling.
Right, your only hope is if you're Philly. I guess the question becomes, do you go gangbusters with the idea that you can pass both Indiana and Miami with the hope that somehow Miami doesn't play well and you end up in the 4-5 matchup with Indiana, which seems highly unlikely. So it's tough. Philly's in a tough spot because they're looking at it going, well, what do we do? Because you'd like to get up to the 4, but then you're most likely in the 4-5, you're going to play Miami.
Not to mention the fact you have to play Milwaukee in the second round.
Right. So I think you'd be better off. I would agree that you'd be better off staying if you're Philly. You're better off staying in that sixth seed. So the question becomes, what's the best route for them to go?
Trust the process.
To do that. Because
let's go with some old.
So maybe that's why Embiid's calf is hurting. Maybe he's setting up to make sure that they finish sixth. And Indiana clearly is, I guess you get Oladipo back, but you lose Sabonis. I mean, who knows what the Pacers look like with that particular lineup. It's going to be something that has never played together before, not this year anyway. So, I mean, Indiana could lose a bunch of games and potentially drop down to that sixth seed. So you wonder, will that be a tankathon between the Pacers and the Sixers to try to stay out of that 4 spot and instead, you know, try to draw Boston in the first round with the idea that then you're avoiding Milwaukee in the second round. Clearly, that seems more relevant for the Sixers. I mean, Indiana clearly can't have any designs on thinking that they're going to go any further than maybe a first round upset. But they're not winning two rounds in the playoffs. Whereas Philly, I think, still harbors the hope that they could be a championship contender. So it'll be interesting to see how those two teams handle it. And then we both obviously think that Orlando is going to pass Brooklyn for the seventh seed.
All right, so now let's move to the West. I mean, the Lakers are locked 5.5 ahead. I think they'd have to really tank, and they're not going to do that. So Lakers are going to be number one. And then from there, it's just there's so many possibilities, Mike. I mean, 4 games separate the number 2 to the 6th seed. The Clippers, the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Thunder, the Rockets. And then the Dallas is a game and a half behind them. So I really think the West, there's a very good chance that things are going to get shifted around. I just think it's possible. I mean, you look at this, it's possible that Utah could still end up with that number 2 seed, which it'd be a year and a half too late, Mike, for your prediction of them being the 2 seed. However,
there you go.
It would finally come to fruition. And I think that's...
But without Bogdanovich, I don't see them leaping up ahead of the Nuggets and the Clippers unless somehow Mike Conley gets into the rejuvenation machine and is back to the Mike Conley of 2 or 3 years ago.
Come on, Jordan Clarkson, man.
Offensive. Look, I don't know. He loves to shoot. I don't think they have enough firepower on offense to be able to move up in front of those teams. So if I'm looking at this,
at the same time, they could drop to number 7 too. It's just like there's so much flexibility with all those teams that, I mean, Dallas could easily end up being the 4 seed at the end of this, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, absolutely. I think any of these teams. I think Utah, to be honest with you, if I'm looking at it, I think Utah is likely to drop because without Bogdanovich, I think that that's a big part of who they are offensively. Plus, we still don't know for sure what the Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert dynamic is like, and you can brush that under the rug all you want, but there was some real animosity that I'm not sure. It seems like once these NBA feuds among teammates get started, that they don't just tend to disappear.
So you, what you're like saying is Donovan Mitchell or Rudy Gobert is going to be traded after this season?
Well, I don't know, but it just, you look at the history of the league, and once things go south, you don't often see a happy reconciliation. Yep. Or maybe you see it for a short period of time on the surface, but underneath the surface, you find out that, man, these guys really did hate each other, and it was only a matter of time till it broke up. So if I was looking at this, I would expect the Lakers to stay at one. I would expect the Clippers to stay at two. I'm honestly expecting the Nuggets to stay at three with skinny Jokic and my guy Bol Bol lighting it up over there.
Do you think Bol Bol gave Jokic his diet over the break? Is that why Jokic lost the weight?
Maybe. I don't know. It could be. I have no idea what got into Jokic or what inspired him or didn't inspire him, but I'm interested to see what he looks like slimmed down, what he can do, whether it's a huge positive for his game, a huge negative, or whether it's just kind of not impactful. It'll be interesting to see it. I expect the Jazz, honestly, to drop out of that four spot. I wouldn't be surprised if Utah ended up at six or seven. I think Houston stays down where they are. I could see them staying in that 6-7 hole. I think Oklahoma City stays right where they are. I think Dallas is the team that moves up. I think Utah is the team that moves down. That's the way I would look at it. And again, that may shuffle. I mean, that may shuffle just because they're so close. Yeah. But I think the big movers, if there's going to be big movers, I think the big movers are Utah and Dallas.
Well, I think I'm hoping for a Thunder Rockets first round playoff matchup, because I would love nothing more than the Thunder to knock out the Rockets, and it would be so fantastic. It would just be glorious. And
it seems like Houston has Utah's number, so I'd be okay with Utah, with Houston playing anybody except for the Jazz. I think anybody but the Jazz, it would be fun to see.
You heard it here first. First round playoff matchup, Houston Rockets versus the Utah Jazz, courtesy of Mike Klingsing. So
No, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying that's.
Well, you don't want it to happen. You're willing it out of existence, which means it's going to happen, Mike.
All right. That just means I get to see the Rockets in the second round, somebody to beat them. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
So then the last thing we're going to predict here, Mike, before we turn our focus to one more thing. If we were right now going to make a prediction as to who's going to come out of the East and who's going to come out of the West, I think we're going to agree on the East. I don't know about the West, but I think we're going to agree on the East. Who would we say? So the East is pretty obvious. I think we're going to say Milwaukee, right, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's honestly... I think it's a Bucks Sixers Eastern Conference final, and I think the Bucks make it to the NBA finals.
So you're thinking the Sixers are going to purposely end in the sixth spot?
I think Philly figures out a way to stay in the sixth spot and stay away from the Bucks in the second round.
Okay.
I really do.
All right. I think the Bucks and whoever they play, they're going to destroy. So that's, I think, I'll be honest with you, Mike, the team that would, if, and I don't think they're better than them, but the mental piece of it all,
Miami,
the mental piece of it all would be Toronto. And I don't think there's a snowball's hell in chance that Toronto can beat them. But I think if there's a team in the East that has them in their head, that are in their head, it would be Toronto. And just because of last year, and there's nothing, I mean, it doesn't, they don't have Kawhi, so it's a different team. But that would be the only team that I think could get in their heads a little bit.
I think Milwaukee, honestly, I think they roll. I think they're going to roll through the East and steamroll it. Look at what they did last year up until they hit that wall after being up 2-0 against the Raptors. I think this year their playoff run looks basically the same except for they just steamroll that Eastern Conference Finals too. I expect Milwaukee to be riding high heading into the NBA Finals.
So now let's go to the West. And I'll let you go first, Mike.
I think it's got to be Lakers Clippers. I mean, there's nothing else that is out there on the horizon that would indicate to you that if those two teams are at their best, the Lakers with LeBron and AD, you got two of the top, I don't know, three, four, five players, wherever you want to rank Anthony Davis, on the same roster. You've got LeBron doing all LeBron things, leading the league in assists.
Having a throne for Zoom interviews.
much more, having a gray beard, much more engaged on the defensive end of the floor this year, knowing that regardless of the fact that he appears to be superhuman, his clock is ticking. And in the back of his mind, he's got to know that. And I think the Lakers and the Clippers both get there. I don't think any of these other teams are going to break through. Could they? Could one of these teams possibly upset the Lakers or the Clippers? Yes. I actually think it's more likely that you have a Western Conference upset knocking off one of those top two teams than somebody knocking off Milwaukee in the East. But I don't see it happening. I see it being Lakers-Clippers. And I think the Lakers get through to the finals, which is thankfully or happily what I had way back when in October when we did our prediction. I had Lakers Bucks, so I'm sticking with Lakers Bucks. That's still
looking
like a
pretty solid
pick.
I had Clippers Sixers, and I don't feel very good about the Sixers. And I'm with you. I think it's got to be Lakers Clippers. I don't think there's anyone else in the West that, you know, like I said, as much as I want to say Portland has a chance, I think Portland would be interesting to play against the Lakers. I don't think they have a chance to beating them. The only team that would theoretically scare me if they were to catch hot would be Houston, but we know James Harden in the playoffs is James Harden in the playoffs, so that's not a worry. And like you talked, you've already highlighted Utah's issues, and you know, Denver, I just don't feel like they're a good matchup for the Lakers. I just don't feel like Denver has a good shot, and the Thunder don't stand a chance against the Lakers or the Clippers. So I would definitely say Lakers Clippers, but I'm joining the Lakers train. I feel the harmonious vibes that are coming. Like the two Lakers scrimmages I've watched, they just seem like it seems. Mike, do you remember when LeBron was doing like the picture thing with the players in the Cavs?
Oh yeah.
I feel like he's kind of bringing that kind of vibe back. You know, I always felt like that was like a college vibe when they were doing that. Like they played like a college team.
Bad sign for the Lakers.
No. I think he's embracing the bubble piece of this all, and trying to be a positive. Because you could look at some of these guys, like you see them complaining about the silliest things when you're millionaires. And yes, I know living in Disney World for 3 months is not necessarily what I would classify. For me, it would be great, but for these,
just because it's a dream of yours, well, don't denigrate these guys.
I think he's really like, you haven't heard him say one thing bad. You've heard him be every single time he's been in an interview. He's been very positive.
He stands to benefit. Let's put it this way: he stands to benefit more than just about anybody else to making this season finish in its entirety and finish with a legitimate champion who he obviously
It's a legacy piece, Mike, right?
It's a legacy piece for him. That's what I'm saying. So he's, let's put it this way, LeBron is far more invested than the 12th man on the Sacramento Kings on seeing this thing through and wanting it to go smoothly so that he can win a title. So, and understandably so, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
But I don't know that LeBron is such a hard guy to read and to understand. We watched him for however many years here in Cleveland, and I don't feel like I ever fully wrapped my head around who he was as a teammate, who he was as a leader, who he was in crunch time. I don't know. I never felt like I had a complete handle on him. It felt like he was gone through several different iterations of his career. And so, I don't know. I'm very interested to see what this year's playoff LeBron looks like with Anthony Davis a part of it. And we talked about it back before AD joined the Lakers, and LeBron was talking up AD for MVP, and it's going to be AD's team. And you and I both said at the time that that was a bunch of BS, and clearly it's a bunch of BS. I mean, LeBron's not deferring to Anthony Davis. He's not talking up Anthony Davis as the MVP or the team leader. It's clearly LeBron's team. It's clearly LeBron's league. And I expect the Lakers to be in the finals. And then it's just going to be a matter of, can Giannis conjure up the type of performance that's going to be necessary to beat the Lakers or whoever eventually does come out of the West? Is Giannis up to that task of being the guy in big moments when his team needs it most? And clearly, he's probably going to win the Defensive Player of the Year. He's more than likely going to win the MVP. So you would certainly say that he's got the credentials to be able to do that and go toe-to-toe with LeBron. But until you see it, people are going to continue to doubt it. So I think he's going to get there. I think when we get to the finals and whoever Giannis is matching up with, whether it's LeBron or it's Kawhi or whoever, I think he's ready. I think he's on a mission. I think Milwaukee is just really, really good. I expect Middleton to play well throughout the playoffs. I expect that their supporting players, their role players, are going to continue to perform the way they have during the regular season.
So are you predicting the Bucks to win it all, Mike?
Absolutely. I think, to me, I'm going to be completely honest here. I think that the key to the Bucks winning the title is going to be, will Budenholzer / Giannis / the Bucks organization play Giannis 43 minutes a game when it matters? Because they didn't last year. He doesn't play that many minutes in the regular season. But in the highest leverage moments, your best player, the best player in the league, has to be on the floor for 40 minutes a game, 40 plus minutes a game. There's just, I don't care how good your team is without that guy on the floor. When you have the best guy in the league, he's got to be on the floor the vast majority of minutes in order for you to win a title. And I, you know, if they insist on only playing him 34 minutes a game in the finals or even the Eastern Conference finals, then there's a chance that they can get beat. If they play him 42 minutes a game, I don't see anybody beating him.
I got the Lakers.
All right, it's fair.
At the Lakers.
I think you're wrong, but I can see the case for it. The case for
Deion Waiters.
LeBron. Yeah, there you go. But I mean, the case for it is LeBron. You want a proven playoff performer. LeBron has a couple warts on his resume, but he has a lot longer track record of performing really well.
He went to eight straight finals. I mean, come on now.
Especially, but he didn't play well in all those finals necessarily. And
he played well in six of the eight.
Right, but I'm just saying.
And the first one was the first year.
Look, I agree. I think his four finals in Cleveland, you would be hard pressed to ask a guy to do anything more.
You couldn't find a 4-year stretch, even going back to the domination of the, you know, Celtics, finding a player that over four straight finals putting up those numbers that he was putting up.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. So that would lead you to believe that based on his performance this year and the fact that it does not seem like age was a factor in his performance, that he's going to continue to be able to do that.
I think the other thing a lot of people are overlooking here too, Mike, is he's now had 4 months off and his body's had time to recover and rest. So he's going to play like this is the beginning, like, and almost like it's the beginning of the season. He's not going to have been playing, you know, when you think about LeBron in the finals, even 2016, 2017, 2018, you could, by the end of the finals, he was exhausted. He was straight up done. Well, his body's had time to recover, and he's not going to have to go through the whole 82-game season and then go into the playoffs and play however many games they have to play to get to the finals. I think that's another big, you know, thing for him is his body isn't going to be as quote-unquote exhausted. You know, I know he's probably not in this game shape that he wants to be in at this point because he hasn't had the reps, but the wear and tear of him playing, I think that's an undersold that I really haven't seen a lot of people talking about.
Well, I think you also have to factor in the fact that he had the long offseason last year when the Lakers didn't make the playoffs. I think the rest is tempered by his age. And so I think there's a combination of people thinking that, yeah, maybe he's gotten more rest, but every day, every hour, every month that ticks by, he gets a little bit older. And at some point, Father Time has to start catching up. And I guess the question becomes, is Giannis up to the task of matching what LeBron's going to be able to bring in the finals? And we'll see. The last couple regular seasons would say yes. Giannis's performance last year in the playoffs up until those last four games in the Eastern Conference Finals would say yes. But that's an awfully big stage, and LeBron's a historic all-time, at the worst, top three player in league history. So to go head-to-head with him, even at age 34, 35, whatever LeBron is right now, that's going to be a huge challenge for Giannis, but I think he's up to it. So
we'll see for sure. All right, Mike, we're in an hour and 4 minutes. What do you think, buddy?
All right, let's quickly do all NBA, or do we want to just save it?
I think we save it.
All right, is it going to come? It's not going to come out.
No, all NBA is not going to come out until they do the awards in the playoffs. So they're going to do the awards. This you can.
All right, you want to just do the first.
Sure, let's do the first
real quick, and not we don't even have to talk about it because there's not a whole lot to really say, especially because the NBA had some more positional fudging that was allowed, or not even fudging, but just kind of being able to move guys around. So I think when you factor that in, I'm not sure that there's really much to talk about, unless I want to go controversial, which I might. So let's just kind of alternate position by position.
Sounds good to me.
I want to start with bigs and work our way to smalls. Okay.
You go first.
So let's start with our first team center. Is Anthony Davis.
I completely agree. Done.
Okay. Our first team forwards.
Okay, I'll go first on this one. Giannis.
Okay, go ahead. Yes.
And LeBron.
Agree. Our next... No. Our second first team forward. You're going to go with LeBron? All right, let's do
I'm
going
to go LeBron. It has all to right, be LeBron. So gonna... Giannis and LeBron, right?
Okay, all right. I'm going to go with Kawhi.
Oh, come on, Mike. Kawhi's... No. It's LeBron. He's going to finish second in MVP voting. There's no way, shape, or form that LeBron is not.
Just continue, man. Just come on. Let's go.
You're going to put him in point. You're going to put him in the point guard.
So you got it. So now I went with Kawhi at forward. So now give me your guards, or give me a guard.
I would probably go a guard.
Yeah. Who's your guard? Who's your first? Who are you? You got to have two guards.
I'd probably go. I don't know. Dame probably missed too much. I don't know. Let me think here.
Oh, see, this is a lot harder than I thought. I thought it was.
Well, who do you have LeBron as a guard? I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, LeBron's a guard. He's eligible at guard. So if you put LeBron at a guard, that allows you to put Kawhi in as a forward.
Well, see, I was in
all three of those guys.
I was going to put Kawhi as a guard, but maybe this goes back to.
I mean, LeBron is much more of a guard than Kawhi. I mean, Kawhi is clearly spends most of his time on both ends of the floor at forward. LeBron spends the vast majority of his time on the offensive end of the floor, bringing the ball up the floor as the nominal point guard. Now, he doesn't defend point guards, but offensively, he's clearly a point guard.
Okay, so who's your other guard then?
All right, so here is where I get to make.
I have Dame written down, but judgment. I don't know if that's right.
Here's where I get the chance to make. So here are your candidates.
Oh, I guess Harden.
I mean, I think
Harden.
I think your legitimate candidates are James Harden, Luka,
ooh,
and maybe Lillard, maybe. But I think with Lillard's team's record, I'm not that I'd put him on the first team. So.
You're going to say Luka because you hate James Harden.
In all honesty, probably the non-biased choice is James Harden. But no, on the Hoopheads podcast, we are not putting James Harden on the first team All-NBA. We are going to move Luka into our first team.
If you remember
guard
at the beginning
positions.
Of the that season, we were talking like Luka could have some MVP buzz. Remember that? I mean, it was. I could buy.
And Dallas kind of tailed off. You know, I mean, as good as their offense was, they kind of played 500 ball for the second half of the season after getting off to a hot start, even though they started to play better during the Porzingis-Doncic minutes, which they weren't at the beginning of the year. So it'll be interesting to see where, you know, where Dallas does. They're an interesting team.
Harden's going to get it, but I would prefer to see Luka get it.
So, but if I was turning in a ballot, I would turn in a ballot that had Luka ahead of Harden. And I know that you could make an argument clearly that, you know, Harden's going to lead the league in scoring, and he's a former MVP, and he's a perennial first team all NBA guy.
He's a black hole, Mike. He's a black hole.
Who wears a Blue Lives Matter mask
in the NBA bubble and doesn't realize what he's wearing?
Let's just put it this way: James Harden is not a fan favorite here on the Hoophead spot. So we're going to go ahead and I'm going to slot Luka. So my team is LeBron and Luka at the guards, Giannis and Kawhi at the forwards, Anthony Davis at the center. And again, I can't quibble if somebody would put Harden in there. It's probably what's going to happen in reality, but it's not happening here.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to put Dame on a first team, so that's why I hadn't written
that. All right, that's fair. I would definitely have Dame. I would have Dame on the second team. I would have Harden on the second team for sure. So
yeah, who would be your second team center?
All right,
I'm just curious on that one. Is it Jokic? Okay,
Jokic. Yeah,
all
Jokic.
Right.
I think Jokic. Although Jokic had the slow, Jokic had the slow start to the season, and kind of seemed like, you know, there's a lot of talk. Is he disinterested? What's going on? Let's just do the both teams.
We're almost done there.
We're almost done. So our center, my center's Jokic. Center is okay. Your second team forwards.
I would have to probably go with. I'm just Rolodexing.
You want your candidates?
I would almost say Simmons. He's almost a forward.
You could make a case. He's kind of the opposite of LeBron. Well, he's very similar to LeBron in that he plays a lot of guard on offense, but
defensively, I don't think he
probably is more.
Like, I could make an argument there,
he's
right?
He's probably more versatile. Yeah, you could definitely make an argument. I don't think I would probably tend to put Simmons. I'd still probably classify him as a guard. And so I think that I'd probably put. So my two guards would probably be Dame and Chris Paul. Would probably be my two.
Well, I mean, yeah, you'd have to consider Chris Paul, considering that.
Although no, I have Harden in there, so I would have. So I'm bumping Chris Paul. Chris Paul.
The third
I'm bumping
team.
You out of the second team. So Chris Paul becomes my.
Oh
third,
no, we're gonna now we're gonna
team. So my. So we're doing them all. So my second team would be Harden and Paul at the guards.
No, I thought Harden and Dame at the guards, and you were bumping Paul to the third team.
Sorry. Harden and Dame at the guards, and then Jokic at center, and then we were kind of talking about the forward. So here's your candidates for third team.
Second team.
Forward. Second team. Man, I'm losing it. Chris Middleton, Siakam.
Siakam's Tatum, in. Siakam. He's got to be in.
Butler.
Siakam and Butler. Those
Jimmy
are my
Butler.
Two. You don't have to say any more.
Okay, I think that's fair.
I can't give it to Middleton. I know the Bucks are have the best record or whatever. Listen, when I look at the Milwaukee Bucks, I don't even think about Chris Middleton. When you said his name tonight, I was like, oh yeah, Chris Middleton. He's on the Milwaukee Bucks. No offense, Chris Middleton.
Right. Chris Middleton is not seemingly a straw that stirs the drink.
No, exactly. Whereas when I think Toronto, I think, well, who's making Toronto go right now? It's Siakam. With the supporting cast of Lowry and Van Vliet and them. When I think about Miami, I think of Butler as the first person I think of, and then I think of Bam. So it's got to be Butler and Siakam. Sorry. And maybe the other person I would maybe consider would be Tatum.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I think you – but I don't think you can put
I think
him.
He's third team.
I don't think you can put him. Yeah, I don't think you can put him on there. All right, so that leaves us with third team. So third team, I think Simmons has got to be on there as a guard. I think Middleton's got to be on there. You got to reward him, despite what we just said. I think he's got to be on there. your center comes down to, is it Embiid or is it Rudy Gobert?
Well, I'll go back to what I said last week. Rudy Gobert shut the whole league down. That's pretty good defense. And it, I don't know who's Embiid's missed so much time. How can, like, I know that he deserves it. Like, I picked, I'm pretty sure, Mike, I picked him to be an MVP this year, right? It was my idiotic statement. Like, he's definitely, when he's out there, you know, he has his moments where he's not playing great, like, that he played, but he does play so well. Like, I want to say him, but at the same time, like, does he deserve it? I don't know. I'm, that's one I'm between. I don't know. What are you, what's your thoughts?
I like Embiid better as a player. Embiid only played 44 games out of whatever the Sixers played, 67. So I think you got to downgrade that. I think Gobert is the most dominant defensive force in basketball. But, and I mean, Embiid, when he's engaged, is just as good. I guess I would tend to lean towards the guy who has a higher ceiling in this case. So I think I'd give it to Embiid, but I don't necessarily feel good.
I could be talked either way, so I'm not going to give a definitive statement.
I don't feel good about that. All right, so I have Gobert at center, Middleton and Tatum at the forwards.
Okay.
Ben Simmons is a guard. And then that last guard spot has a lot of candidates.
I mean,
so
yeah.
I think...
Is Kemba in the Kyle discussion Lowry, or no?
No, okay. I don't think so. Kyle Lowry...
Oh my gosh, I'm about to fall out of my chair. You just said Kyle... He was the other one I was...
I'm just telling you who's candidates. I'm not saying these are... You have Russell Westbrook. Booker.
No.
You're not going with Booker. Donovan Mitchell.
Mitchell. Okay. McCollum or no?
Bradley Beal.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley Beal averaged whatever 30-something game. All right, I think I'm going to go with, of all those guys, I think I got to go with Westbrook.
Oh my god.
Westbrook. Okay, so Westbrook right now, do you know what Westbrook's final season averages are?
To a triple double, right?
I mean, these are his counting stats. So he's averaging 27, 8 and 7.
Yep. Yeah.
After January 1, he averaged 32 a game on 54% shooting since January 1st. And I'm not a huge Russell
Westbrook
fan.
You like him more than
Harden. I like him more than Harden. I'm not a fan of Kyle Lowry. I'm not a fan necessarily of Devin Booker and warding a guy who plays on a losing team. So I would... That's
the same stance for Bradley Beal then, right?
Yeah, I'm going with Westbrook.
Yeah, I would probably...
As much as I'm not necessarily a huge Westbrook fan, I think Westbrook
gets
my last guard spot.
What happened to Chris Paul? Found a wrinkle.
We have him on second? No. Oh, all right.
Found
a
wrinkle.
Right.
Chris Paul,
you're
baby.
Right.
Let's go.
All right, there we go. So, all right, so good. Thank you. Man. It's getting late. I'm totally losing it. So our third team collectively, I think we kind of agree. Chris Paul.
Ben Simmons. Embiid.
Chris Middleton. Jason Tatum. And Joel Embiid.
All right, Mike. I think we've done the Lord's work tonight. I think we can go to bed.
All right, we're done. All right, that sounds like a plan. All right, well, everyone, we appreciate you listening. The next time we talk NBA... we will be talking about actual basketball. And by that point, who knows? Maybe the Memphis Grizzlies will be 4-0 and
wait a second. We have to do our favorite segment. We didn't do that.
Good call. Percentage
of a legitimate champion. I'm staying right where we were last week.
So you were at what?
Yeah, I was 60? At 60. I stayed there.
All right, I'm going to go. I was at 45. I'm going to continue to creep up. I'm going to go. It's 50-50 now. If we can keep Lou Will out of Magic City, we might even go 51. But I'm going to stay 50-50.
All right, I want to introduce a new segment, Mike. The next time we talk NBA, will the Major League Baseball still be playing? It's a yes or a no, Mike.
All right. Okay, I'm going to say yes for next week. But if you ask me for my chances that the Major League Baseball gets to play a legitimate World Series, I'm going to go with 0.05%.
Hey, it's just our luck too.
It's completely impossible.
The Indians are playing really well, playing really good baseball. It's just our luck. This is what's going to happen. We're going to be 14-2 or 15-2, and then they're going to cancel the season or something like that. Just get ready for it. I feel that'll be Cleveland's luck. That's what I'm going to say right there.
That was back in the strike year, whatever it was, 94, right? The Indians were in first place, and we were running through the American League, and then
yeah.
The
so
got
I'm going to say
so
next week
before.
We will still be playing baseball.
Yeah, I agree.
That's our new fun segment.
But I don't think it's going to be too much long. I don't think it's going to happen too much longer after that.
All right, we'll see what happens. All right, sorry, Mike. Do your housekeeping now.
It's all good. All right, housekeeping. Just want to remind you of the new podcast that we have out there, Thrive with Trevor Huffman, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Beyond the Ball, and our first team NBA podcast, Cavaliers Central with Justin Matcham. Justin put out an episode about Andre Drummond's future with the Cavs this week, and coming, I believe tomorrow, will be another episode about Kevin Love's future with the Cavs and what Justin thinks is going to happen there. So if you are a Cavs fan or an NBA fan, you definitely want to check out Cavaliers Central. We're going to have some more NBA team shows coming on board soon. If you are interested in joining us and hosting your own basketball-themed podcast or an NBA team podcast, please get in contact with us. Reach out, Mike@HoopHeadsPod.com. Join our HoopHeads Pod network. We're very excited about that. And please continue to listen to our flagship HoopHeads podcast with Jason and I doing our NBA every Tuesday night / Wednesday morning is when it'll hit your feed. And then we do our interview shows with coaches, obviously, every Monday and Friday those come out. So we appreciate you listening. Please continue to do so. We appreciate your support, and we look forward to continue to bringing you great content in the weeks, months, years ahead. So thanks to everyone out there. We appreciate it, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Coaches, we've teamed up with E3 Analytics so you can now purchase 3 of their exclusive new playbooks. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from Coach Don Showalter of USA Basketball, Coach Mike Flynn from the Illawarra Hawks in Australia, who coached LaMelo Ball last season, and Coach Tyler Whitcomb from West Michigan Aviation Academy. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.